This is Houston Matters, a weekly look at the people, places, issues, and ideas affecting our lives here in Greater Houston. I'm Craig Cohen. There are a lot of people here in Houston. In fact, more than ever before. Last year, Harris County saw more population growth than any U.S. county. We will welcome our new neighbors and consider what so many more of us around means for all Houstonians later this hour. We start, though, in Northeast Houston, where students may find themselves in a new school district next fall. The North Forest Independent School District, which has struggled academically and financially, learned this week that it will be closed by the state and merged with HISD. The district plans to fight that move. In a few minutes, we will talk with North Forest parents about what this decision might mean for their kids. First, though, a report on the decision from KUHF's education reporter, Laura Isensee.
For years, North Forest ISD has struggled with poor academics and botched finances. This week, the Texas Education Agency decided it's time to start over. Debbie Ratcliffe is with the agency.
If it could fix it, it would have fixed it by now. There's a point at which we've got to say enough is enough. We need to give someone else the opportunity to do a better job educating these students.
Last year, the education commissioner first ordered closing North Forest, but gave it a year to improve. Ratcliffe says North Forest did improve, but not enough. For example, only 66% of North Forest students finish high school.
Think about that number for a minute. That means 34% of their students are not graduating.
To help more kids graduate, North Forest wanted to partner with three high-profile charter school operators. Ratcliffe says that plan didn't have enough details and came too late.
Today's decision is unfortunate, unjust, and intellectually dishonest on behalf of the Texas Education Agency.
That's North Forest attorney Chris Tritico. He says they weren't given a full year to improve, but still made big strides.
The commissioner said you got a year to improve. We improved over a year more rapidly than any other district in Texas. Yet all I hear is this district isn't being run properly. Those are old prejudices.
Tritico says North Forest will continue to fight on five different legal fronts, from state administrative court all the way to Washington, D.C. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee is a strong North Forest ally. At a press conference outside the NAACP headquarters in Houston's 3rd Ward, she calls the merger a civil rights violation.
Can you tell me why we have become the victim, if you will, of the TEA's decision on closing schools? Why do we have to be an example? The TEA over the years has closed four school districts, this is my recollection. All of them were African-American run.
With all the anxiety about the merger, Houston ISD says it will listen to parents, students, and teachers with North Forest. Orlando Riddick is the chief high school officer for HISD. He says a transition team will review the district's academics, personnel, buildings, and buses.
We need to move forward in that transition. As they move through on their appeal process, I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So it's important to know that as we move forward, that we continue what is our transition process to bring North Forest over to HISD.
If it goes through, the merger will take effect July 1st, and North Forest will become the largest school district closed in Texas. From the KUHF Education Desk, I'm Laura Isensee.
Joining us now, Pastor Maceo Dillard Jr., a parent at North Forest. Pastor Dillard, welcome to Houston Matters.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. Us is Millicent Edwards, also a parent of a student at North Forest. Millicent Edwards, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Ivory Mayhorn is president of Super Neighborhood 47. He is a school helper and grandparent of a North Forest student. Ivory, thank you as well.
Thanks, sir.
And we welcome you to the conversation as well at 713-440-8870 or talk@HoustonMatters.org. What do you think is best for students in a public school district that is struggling academically? Let us know. Let me start with Maceo and Millicent. How do you feel about the decision that's coming here from the state to close North Forest and merge it with HISD?
Craig, I'm very dissatisfied with the decision. They have been targeted in this district for quite a while, and I am a parent. I have three sons at the high school, a junior and two sophomores. We're preparing to stay, preparing to fight as a parent. I don't believe the merger is good for the district, for the community, and definitely not for the kids. HISD record, I heard them saying about how many students that didn't graduate from North Forest, but they don't go and give the stats for HISD students graduating in that same area, if they have 10 ninth graders, only three of them going to graduate. And you check the numbers, the HISD numbers are not comparable. I'm talking about in the predominantly black district area with that of North Forest. And the success rate that they did gain the past few years has been excellent.
Millicent?
I actually have three kids also in the district. And one of the things that is most troubling to me is the fact that they would be absorbed into low-performing schools. I mean, I definitely don't see any benefit. I mean, as far as the numbers that I've seen, they're just as challenged with educating kids in the same area as North Forest. So with me, my biggest concern is the fact that they will be bused out of the community into those schools.
Ivory, is this what you're hearing from other parents?
Craig, from a community standpoint, we have parents that are worried about the uncertainty that can happen next year. The inconvenience, the change that's going to affect the children, no more social involvement with the community, with the students that they know. They'll be leaving from their community, going to another community early in the morning, coming back late at night. And on top of all of that, they won't be getting a higher education than they're already getting.
But do we know for sure, speaking to the question of busing, do we know exactly what it is that may happen? Could these schools still stay open, students still go to the same schools, and it's just the administration of the schools goes through HISD?
Well, that's an interesting question. What I'm understanding is HISD itself have decreasing enrollment in their neighboring schools to North Forest. And they would be shoring up their low enrollment with the influx of the kids coming from North Forest. And that's using the children to fix the HISD problem when TEA and HISD should be looking at what's best for our kids over here in Northeast Houston.
Millicent.
Yes, I definitely understand that it would not be of benefit. I do understand that there is a serious situation with them, like he's just pointed out, as far as them, is of benefit for them to absorb the kids and for the kids to go to their schools. And they look out, I would see them looking out for themselves as far as making sure that their enrollment is where it should be, rather than taking consideration the neighborhood schools and keeping those schools open.
So what do you do about a scenario where, regardless of how the HISD schools are faring, the North Forest schools are not faring very well? I don't think anybody would look at a 66% graduation rate and be happy about that, right?
I understand it. Now, if we take into account the history, and like she did point out, there have been significant improvement in the district. And a lot of times, the time frame that the district was given to improve was not enough time in to show the significant, as long as there was an increase and there is a plan in place, I feel, for the increase to continue.
I'd like to chime in and say that the numbers that they are looking at also, next year those numbers would go up because they have the Yes Prep. First graduating class that's going to come in. So the numbers would change, and the numbers that they missed by two students. And we take in a lot of students that HISD send over to North Forest.
So now when you say there were two students short, what you're saying is they would have been over that two-thirds threshold
exactly.
If two more students had graduated.
Exactly.
So is it ultimately, from the three of you, your contention that if there was just a little more time, there's enough happening, enough improvement that North Forest can stand on its own? Ivory.
Craig, without a doubt, North Forest would not only meet that threshold, it would dramatically exceed that threshold with just a little more time. We know this. We already see the current numbers. They are already there to hit that mark on next year. There is no reason in the world to close an entire school district because we are short two students. That's nonsense.
Is it your belief that the TEA made up its mind last year that it didn't really matter how much North Forest improved. They had every intention of closing it.
That does seem to be the pattern. TEA last year gave us some specific things that they wanted us to get done. Year before, they gave us another group of particular things they wanted done. Okay, those things are changing. They've changed every year. Okay, so the first year when TEA decided that they wanted to close North Forest, they gave us about 3 points that we needed to cover. After we accomplished that, they came back the next year and gave us 10 points. And see, now they're saying, well, it's just been too long, and so we're just going to close. They're not even giving us any particular reasons, any real reasons to close North Forest.
Now, I don't want to, you know, overstate this point, but as we did hear in Laura Eisensee's report, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee referred to this move as a civil rights violation. Do you see it that way, or is that maybe overstating it a little bit?
From a community standpoint, I think that there are some definite civil rights issues here.
Such as?
Well, first of all, taxpayers should have some decision-making in this process. I mean, we're the voters. We're the ones who deserve representation in these matters. This is some critical times here.
So you're saying that, at least from your point of view, people within the district should dictate whether the district itself should be dissolved and folded into HISD.
Correct.
Well, absolutely.
Correct. We look at you saying we don't have our opinion. Like, as parents, they have you asking us what's going to happen with HISD. No one from HISD or TAA has come down and talked. I'm PTA president at the high school. No one has asked to speak with us, to talk to us, to say, look, we're taking over. This is what's going to happen. This is why this is a good move. They don't even care what our opinion is, and they've shown us they don't care what our opinion is because they haven't asked us.
And I should just point out that we reached out to the Texas Education Agency and the Houston Independent School District to join us for this conversation. They each declined and have no comment at this time. Though we did get the impression that they will have more comments as time goes on.
Right.
All right, Millicent, you wanted to chime in?
No, I was just in agreement. I have not myself been approached. I have not known of any type of reaching out from either the TA or HIZ. You know, they speak about wanting to have the conversation with the parents and understand what the kids need, but we have not had any type of reach out from them.
Hey, Craig, I'm representing 4 super neighborhoods that are in and around the North Forest School District, and that is representing 80,000 residents out there who are all tied to North Forest ISD. All the presidents of these super neighborhoods have all united and agreed that North Forest should stay open, and we should work on a plan to bring North Forest to a 21st century educational system. That's our goal. But you know, in all of this, we have never seen or heard from TEA. And if it was a school district like the Woodlands or like River Oaks, TEA would be showing up here. But we've been ignored and just run over by TEA. And that tells me that there's some discrimination. There's some choosing of what school district they will work with and what school districts they won't.
And my understanding is they're giving HISD $20 million and then all of our property. And then we don't even get the benefit. Even if we go to HISD, it's too late for kids to even register for the magnet programs. It's too late for the kids to get enrolled in any of the programs advanced for the school year that's coming up in July.
That's Maceo Dillard Jr. He and Millicent Edwards are each parents of students at the North Forest Independent School District. Ivory Mayhorn is president of Super Neighborhood 47, school helper and grandparent of a North Forest student. Thank you all for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us today.
Thank you.
Up next on Houston Matters, we'll learn more about the potential court battle ahead from North Forest ISD attorney Chris Tritico. And we'll talk with Morgan Smith, a reporter from the Texas Tribune, who wrote a 5-part series on school closings looking at North Forest, as well as Wilmer Hutchins, a school district that was closed and merged with the Dallas Independent School District. And we'll welcome more of your calls and emails, 713-440-8870 or talk@houstonmatters.org. This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. For years, the North Forest Independent School District has struggled. Just 66% of students there finished high school this past year. So the Texas Education Agency ordered that unless there was a significant improvement within the year, North Forest would be closed. This week, the TEA upheld that decision and announced North Forest will merge with HISD. We continue our discussion now with Chris Tritico, an attorney representing North Forest who vows to fight the decision in court. Chris, welcome to Houston Matters.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Morgan Smith, a reporter from the Texas Tribune, who wrote a series on school closings and has followed not just North Forest, but also examined what happened to the Wilmer Hutchins School District, which merged with the Dallas Independent School District. Morgan, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Chris, let me pose this initial question to you. Why not merge North Forest with HISD?
Well, first, because it's for to benefit the children of North Forest, it's better to leave the district in place and use the model that we have proposed to the commissioner with a company called Philo that would bring in three of the largest charter school companies in the nation to Philo would manage the district and open district charter schools within the district and offer a combination of public schools and public charters that would more rapidly improve the educational output that these children will receive than HISD can do. The proposal to merge with HISD would merge us with the Northeast Corridor of HISD. Cashmere High School and those schools in the Northeast operate at or less than North Forest High School does. And so moving us into that area doesn't improve the education, it spreads out bad numbers.
When you say at or less, by what measures?
By the completion rate, by the AYP standards. Every standard, we are at or above Cashmere High School.
Morgan, what lessons can be learned from the Wilmer Hutchins merger?
Well, we saw Wilmer Hutchins was a school district that was closed by the agency in July 2006. Just recently, during the beginning of the last school year, it was reopened as a part of Dallas ISD with three campuses that were in the Wilmer Hutchins neighborhood of Dallas. In the meantime, in those 6 years that the entire district had been closed, students had to ride 30 to 45 minutes to school to their campuses within the Dallas Independent School District. In 2008, the Dallas Independent School District passed a huge bond initiative that included financing facilities to revamp all of the old buildings in the Wilmer Hutchins neighborhood, and they were finally able to reopen it. And that was after 6 years.
We welcome your questions and comments at 713-440-8870 or talk@houstonmatters.org. What would you like to see happen at North Forest? In general, what should happen to school districts that consistently struggle academically? We'll take a call now from Jim near North Forest. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
And what's your question or comment?
Well, I was just kind of wondering, it seems like there's a lot of adult feelings and emotions getting in the way of the students really getting the education they need. Are the buildings in North Forest ID that bad that they would have to close down the system?
Chris, is this about buildings?
Well, it's unfortunately about money and buildings, and he's partially right that the agency and HISD have not really taken the best interest of the students of North Forest into account when they're making this decision to close the district. And looking at it from a HISD, it appears to me, has been looking at this from a financial aspect instead of an educational aspect. We have shown, and you brought up 66% completion rate. We went up in our completion rate almost 7.5% in one school year. The problem is not that we were only 66%. The problem is the commissioner moved the goal line at the end of the game. Under the new standard that he announced when he closed us, we missed our completion rate by two students. So two students don't drop out, or two students don't make an F, and we've made the new standard, let alone him moving the goalpost.
Well, I guess maybe to play devil's advocate, the counter to that might be if you start so low with something like a completion rate that's, in the 50% range, 59%, 66% is a nice improvement, but that's still not anywhere near where it ought to be.
Well, let's look at it this way. The commissioner said you have 1 year to improve, even though he cut that off in the calendar year 2011. So we really didn't have a year to improve because the number was already fixed when he signed his order. So it's kind of a fake out that he did with us. With that said, he left us a non-accredited revoked, which means we can't bring in Teach for America teachers. We can't bring in alternative certification teachers. We can't bring in professional people to come in and run the district because no one is going to leave a job to come to a job that's ending. And so by leaving us non-accredited revoked, we were unable to bring in fresh new people and fresh new ideas. And even saddled that way, we brought our completion rate up almost 7%.
We're talking with Chris Tritico, attorney representing North Forest Independent School District. We're also talking with Morgan Smith, a reporter from the Texas Tribune. Morgan, how are students that would have been in the Wilmer Hutchins District doing today in the Dallas Independent School District? Is there any way to sort of gauge how several years down the road things are going after a merger like this?
So this is a situation where students that were in this area dispersed to different schools in the Dallas Independent School District. And starting in the fall of last year, students that were in that neighborhood are now attending their community neighborhood schools again. And it's set up so that it's the kind of program where students from all over Dallas ISD can apply to attend these schools where they've put big efforts towards having top quality math and technology programs. So they've kind of created what amounts to a magnet program in the old neighborhood of Wilmer Hutchins, where there used to be no school. And so you have top students from around the district that are coming into the school along with students who would have attended it otherwise. And at this point, all signs are pointing to the fact that they are managing to make a rebound, at least from where the performance was in Wilmer Hutchins when the TEA finally, after four decades of academic and financial struggles, shut it down.
Let's take another call. We have Sally on the line from North Houston. Hi, Sally.
Hi. Why hasn't there been faster improvement in North Forest? Wasn't the TEA's attempt to shut down the district last year enough of a wake-up call?
Well, that's a great question. You got to understand that the history here. North Forest has struggled for a long, long time, and nobody's denying that, and I'm certainly not. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the commissioner moved in, removed the school board, and placed in his own hand-picked board of managers to manage the district, and his own hand-picked superintendent to come in who left the agency working directly under the commissioner to come in and manage the district. Under that management, the district lost all of its funds and it had a negative fund balance, never turned in an audit on time, never turned in an unqualified audit. So they squandered the money of the district. They didn't bring in any new programs to improve the educational output of the district. And then after they were removed, by statute, they could only stay 2 years, so they were removed. The commissioner wrote a letter to the district and said, you did not improve over the last 2 years, therefore I'm closing you. And so while the agency was managing the district, they digressed even further than they had before, and then we got closed because his management team did not fix the district. We, and on the other hand, in 12 months, have brought the district to a $4.5 million fund balance, turned in our audit timely and unqualified, which is the way it's supposed to be, and we're on track to have a $6.5 million fund balance next year, and we brought the district's completion rate up almost 7%. And so we're on the right track. We've brought in New York University to partner with us. We've partnered with on the financial side of the district. We partnered with the Harris County Department of Education. They run the financial aspect of the district. We don't do it ourselves anymore. We have a manager from the Harris County Department of Ed to come in and do it. We have done everything the commissioner said at a more rapid pace than he asked for.
Chris Tritico is an attorney representing the North Forest Independent School District. Chris, thanks so much for talking with us.
You bet.
And Morgan Smith is a reporter from the Texas Tribune. Morgan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We reached out, as I said, to the Texas Education Agency and the Houston Independent School District to join us for our conversation today. They each declined and have no comment at this time.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm.
Just ahead, what you need to know about Houston if, like me and tens of thousands of others, you are new to town. This is Houston Matters. This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. If you feel like there are more people around the Bayou City these days, well, trust your feelings. The U.S. Census Bureau says the Houston metro area has seen greater population growth than any other U.S. metro in the last decade. And last year, Harris County added more residents than any other U.S. county. And, well, frankly, that includes me. As a Houston newbie, I thought it might be helpful on behalf of all the other newly arrived Houstonians to learn about our new city and how so many more of us here impacts our community. To help on this quest, I sat down with KUHF reporters Gail DeLauder, Dave Failing, Carrie Feibel, Laura Isensee, and Andrew Schneider. Each covers an aspect of Houston that new arrivals probably ought to know about. I began by asking Dave Failing, our state impact reporter on energy and the environment, just how big a deal energy is for Houston.
The biggest. It still employs overall the most people of all industries.
For someone who's brand new to Houston, what should they understand about how people perceive the gas and oil industry?
Well, it is the world center for it, or at least the center for it in the United States, and it's always debatable as to around the world where, who's got the energy capital designation, but Houston often takes it. You're where it all happens. If you belong in that business, that's your line of work. This is where they're consolidating companies. You've got Exxon consolidating its operations up towards the Woodlands now. A huge construction project. Actually, it's one of the biggest construction projects of its kind in the country because they want to consolidate all their people, or at least a good number of them, in that one place. And that's what a lot of companies have done. They've moved to Houston from Oklahoma, from Louisiana, other energy states, because they realize this is where anybody who's in the business and who's at the top of the business in the energy business, this is often where you find them. And all the other people that support, because it's not just the engineers and the geologists, but then you've got the accountants, the lawyers, people that specialize in servicing those different sorts of industries that have specialties in those areas.
So it really makes the city go.
Absolutely. And it's less so now than it had been. I bet Carrie will talk about how healthcare now is a big employer, too. But it used to be a lot more so in Houston. It seemed like everybody worked in the oil and gas business. It's less so now, but as we've seen because of the fracking popularity and what that's done for oil and gas production in the state, you've seen the ripple effect here in Houston to where that's become a major driver behind the fact that we have so much less unemployment than most other places.
And then in terms of the environment, we have smog here?
Oh, yeah. We're one of the worst. We're under the designation from the EPA, and so they keep a watch on us because of the ozone levels, and they're under certain stipulations as to what they can do in Houston in terms of, well, a lot of things, industrial development and whatnot, to meet EPA requirements because our smog is so bad. It's not as bad as it used to be, though. It used to be far worse, so they've made great strides in that. But it's a double-edged sword because while we get lots of jobs from the energy industry, we've also got a lot of petrochemical plants here that pollute, as well as power plants.
Carrie Feibel covers healthcare for KUHF. Carrie, Dave alluded to this. How big of an industry is the healthcare industry here?
Well, it is huge. The Texas Medical Center, which is to the south of downtown, I mean, it can rightly be called one of the bigger downtowns in the country if it just was by itself, not including the other sort of job centers that we have throughout Houston. And I think if you take all the hospitals and universities and specialty labs that are all members of the, quote, Texas Medical Center, they employ more than 100,000 people. So it's a huge area. It's sort of the glittering, dazzling, high-tech center where all sorts of things are getting invented and cures are being worked on. And that's where globally people are flying in to get top-tier medical care.
The first time I'm a patient and I need to go somewhere within all of these buildings, how am I going to find that doctor I need to see?
It does intimidate a lot of people, and that is one of the big problems that the medical center has had is it's so dense and it's so concentrated that they have special maps and they have skywalks and they have the light rail going through there. So, you know, a lot of times you have to be a little proactive, go on the website of your hospital and go to their navigational site and figure out what to do and where to go. But people say it's worth it. I mean, the care there is excellent. I personally, you know, see a lot of doctors there, even though parking can be a hassle. You know, that's the whole point of why all those hospitals got together and created this sort of corporate entity to govern parking, transportation, flooding. They had some bad flooding. Historically, a lot of Houstonians know that many of the hospitals flooded during Hurricane Allison. They've worked really hard on that to keep it safe during the hurricanes that we have so frequently.
What else do new Houstonians need to know about beyond the traditional, you know, you start a new job and you have healthcare through that?
Well, it's interesting that a lot of people are moving here for jobs. And a lot of times if people are coming here for some of the high-tech jobs, they're going to have jobs with insurance. So that's not a concern. But on the other hand, this is sort of a city of haves and have-nots medically, insurance-wise. You know, Texas is the number one state in the country for people without insurance. 23% of the population does not have any health coverage, even Medicare or Medicaid. And in Harris County, in Houston, it's even higher than that because we have so many low-income jobs that don't offer health coverage. Now, if you're moving here and you have a job with coverage, you may think, well, that doesn't really apply to me. How does that affect me? Why do I have to care about that? It does affect everyone because the way those uninsured people get covered is by insurance plans raising premiums on the rest of us. And also local taxes pay for all those emergency room visits by the uninsured and so forth. So we all end up paying for it one way or another.
Gail DeLauder covers transportation for KUHF. And Gail, Carey alluded to the fact that you have to plan ahead if you want to head to the medical district. And
yes,
that brings up what I think maybe is the number one issue when it comes to transportation in Houston. There's a lot of traffic here.
Well, you know those bumper stickers you used to see on cars that said, get in, sit down, shut up, and hold on? That's kind of the watchword about getting around Houston. If you're moving to Houston and you're moving from a smaller city, if you're not coming from a major city comparable to this one, you have to mentally prepare yourself, emotionally prepare yourself for what's out there on the freeways. You will deal with the most challenging driving conditions you have ever seen. The further out you live, the more limited your options for public transit. If you live outside the loop, pretty much the only way you have to get into downtown is by using a park and ride or a vanpool. There are no trains. It's either that or your car. That's the only way you're going to get to work. The freeway construction is crazy right now. There's a lot of plans to bring people in from the Northwest, where a lot of the growing suburbs are. There is a Grand Parkway, which I like to refer to as the loop around the loop around the loop, which is being built to provide connectivity to the major arteries that come in from the northern, southern areas to the city. But the driving conditions are very challenging. I mean, six lanes, seven lanes, you'll be driving along. You're in the right lane. You want to go slow. And then these other lanes merge in. All of a sudden, you're in the middle of the freeway, 70, 80 miles an hour all around you. The good news is you can get around Houston without getting on the freeway. If you're a white-knuckle driver, there are routes that you can take, but you're going to sit through a lot of lights. It's going to take you a little bit longer. You can hug the feeder road if you want, but sometimes that traffic is pretty bad as well. So that, yeah, you've just got to prepare yourself. The further out you are, the more driving you're going to do, and like you say, you're going to get stuck in traffic at the various bogged-down points coming into downtown.
My favorite challenge so far each day is a seven-lane hop from the edge of 610 to 290 west, heading northwest. And you got to do that in about a half a mile in the midst of heavy traffic.
There are several points like that, I-10, I-45, where you've got to do this delicate dance and get over to where you need to go to exit. And that's one thing that TxDOT's been looking at trying to correct, because these things just sort of happen over time. Another bad spot on 45, which we call the Pierce Elevated, that goes through the downtown area. You're going northbound, 59 comes in, there is no speed up lane. You're just there. It's like a slot that just comes in and you're there. It's like, what do? You can't stop. You can't do anything. So that's something that TxDOT's been working at over time to try to correct some of these and just make things flow more smoothly.
And with more and more people coming to Houston, what does that mean for more and more cars on the roads, on the impact of the roads themselves?
That's one topic that we looked at last week, is maintenance versus new construction. And some of the criticism is we're building all these new roads and aren't maintaining the ones that are here right now. So that means infrastructure problems, problems with bridges, things such as that. And we're finally hearing some discussion right now. Well, maybe we need a train. Maybe we need this. Maybe we need that. But the only rail that we have is in the core of the city, and it's not going to get you to the outlying areas.
Laura Eisensee covers education issues for KUHF. Laura, parents that are moving to Houston have to think about, I imagine, a lot of things as they're trying to figure out the best school for their children? What are some of the things they should be thinking about?
Well, I think for any parent, whether they're new to Houston or have been here for a while, finding the right school for your child is pretty daunting. The good news is that in the greater Houston area, there are a lot of choices. Traditional public schools, charter schools, and then private schools if you can afford them. When it comes to public schools, there are dozens of public school districts in the greater Houston area. And so that might be a pretty big factor in deciding where you want to live or what school you want to send your child to. So there's Houston and Cypress Fairbanks and Montgomery County schools up in the Woodlands. And even Houston ISD really prides itself on being a district of choice. You don't have to go to the school you're zoned to. If you meet certain requirements, your child can transfer to another school, maybe one that has a specific program or is closer to where you work. And then besides that, there are over 100 magnet schools in Houston ISD.
Andrew Schneider covers business for KUHF. Andrew, the first thing that stuck out to me when I got to Houston, when it came to where businesses are located, it's that they're located everywhere. There's no zoning here. I don't know why something is where it is.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because when I was moving down here, one of the first things that I heard about the city was there's an old saying that the business of Houston is business. And that's certainly true. It has a lot to do with the no zoning requirement. You can find in the space of a few blocks some, you know, very high-end shopping and some things that most people probably would not want to live next to. And the gallery is a perfect example of that. You know, I feel like, in a way, Dave has already done a great deal of my presentation for me. I mean, most people, when they think of Houston and they think of business, they're going to think of the energy sector. And it's certainly true, although the region has made a great effort to try and diversify itself, particularly since the 1980s when the price of oil crashed. You have the petrochemical sector, but you also have the medical sector, a thriving retail sector, the arts community, which is doing a tremendous business here. It's been my good fortune over the 2 years that I've been here to just speak to people from all different walks of life. You know, again, people will tend to look at Houston and they will tend to think of it in terms of big business because we have a lot of Fortune 500 companies here. But it's also a very friendly city for small businesses. So people are starting those up all the time.
All right. So everyone, what did we miss? Gail?
Well, there's different Houstons. That's the way I perceive it. You have the inner loop Houston, which is more of a core city. And then outside, it's more of a suburban area. I visualize Houston more as a city state than a conventional city. Because you go around and you can find some areas of the city that are essentially rural. You have traditional subdivisions. You have the older neighborhoods inside the city. You have the high-rise living downtown. So it's a lot of different things. It's hard to categorize Houston as one thing because it's just so vast and large. You have a little bit of everything.
It used to be in the oil and gas business that this was the only place to do it, and so they didn't really care if you liked the city or not because this was your pretty much your only option. That's changed a lot. I think it's 1% of all new big road projects that are, I think, state-funded have to spend like 1% on landscaping, which may strike some people as like, well, duh, of course you want to landscape roads. It might make them look nice. Well, that's something new. That was not done in years past, and it was why so many of our highways here weren't very nice to look at. And since you spend so much time in your car, that's a big factor. Well, now you see a lot of trees being planted and care being taken to make things look aesthetically nice. So that whole idea that we should try to make as a city this place attractive as a place to live, not just to work, is something that's actually new in Houston, relatively speaking.
I would agree with that, Dave. I mean, I think that is Houston's number one problem is, you know, people want to move here, but we've got competition. And there's some things Houston will never have. We will never have mountains. We will never have skiing. You know, we do have the ocean, but it's not acknowledged to be the best beaches in Texas, let alone on the Gulf Coast. It's just not the pretty part of the Gulf. Some of the ways that that's being compensated for are, you know, beautification, but also arts and also the restaurant scene. And those have sort of emerged as Houston's calling cards.
Gail, Laura, Andrew, Dave, Carrie, thank you all very much for joining us on Houston Matters.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Houston is filled with promise. Laredo's a beautiful place. Galveston sings like that song that I loved. Its meaning has not been erased. And some things they
to be still. Belief has not failed me, and so I'm put to the test.
My name is Norman Koch, and I'm the technology manager for the Shell Eco Marathon globally. Well, the event actually originated in 1939 from a friendly wager between some Shell employees in our then research laboratory in Wood River, Illinois. The modern era of the Shell Eco Marathon started in 1985, where we invited students from all over Europe to build a vehicle and compete for the best fuel economy.
Philip Taffy.
Devin Lahoody.
Michael Timpty.
My name is Jake Negwis, and I go to St. John's School. I'm the team manager for the St. John's School team. Our car is called the Megalord. It's an electric car. This year, it's an aluminum frame, which is a piece of sheet metal is what we started with, and we kind of folded it into the shape of our current frame. We have a foam and plastic shell, and then we have solar panels on the top. The category is battery solar, and basically, we have mostly battery, but the solar kind of augments the battery just a little bit to kind of produce a little bit of energy while we're on our run.
I'm Philip Taffet. We've done some testing today and earlier this week, and it runs pretty well. Everything seems to be working. We haven't gone up to top speed, but it's in the 20 miles an hour range, is as fast as we've gone. I thought it was a neat project, and there's a lot of opportunity to learn things that you can't really learn in a classroom.
I'm Jake Nyquist. I don't feel that we're probably going to win, but I feel like we're going to have a pretty successful event for us, and I think it'll be lots of fun. There's some competitors who are very, very, very good that I think would be hard to beat. I'm Jake Nyquist from River Oaks, and you're listening to Houston Matters.
This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. The 2013 Major League Baseball season kicked off this week, and it's already tough sledding for the Houston Astros. They lost 100 games each of the last two seasons. They have the league's lowest payroll. In fact, their 25-man roster makes less combined than Alex Rodriguez makes for the Yankees alone. And their debut in the American League, well, after an opening day victory, it's not exactly been stellar. The Stros struck out 46 times in the next three games and lost back-to-back shutouts. It looks like they may lose 100 games again this season. But as much as they want to compete as best they can, the Astros franchise is fixated on long-term goals, on building up the franchise through smart drafts and cultivating talent through the minors. Among those expressing optimism about the Astros' ability to maintain that long-term approach is Milo Hamilton. For 59 years, Hamilton called play-by-play in the major leagues, including 27 seasons for the Astros. He retired from full-time broadcasting duties last season, but remains engaged with the team. I caught up with him at Minute Maid Park during batting practice last week. I asked him what intrigued him most about the 2013 Astros.
Well, the intrigue is we're going to the American League. And it's going to be tough because every club over there is good. They all play home run ball. And that's why Jeff Luhnow added power. And you saw the results of it in our spring camp. We hit more home runs than we've hit in many, many years in Florida. And you're going to have to, you cannot play little ball in the American League West. You got to hit the ball out of the park a lot. And so we've got about four or five guys in the lineup now that are home run threats. We haven't had that in a long time. So that's going to be good.
Is there any sort of secret formula to a situation where you have the lowest payroll in the league, you're going into a new league, dealing with the designated hitter for the first time? There's so much to deal with. Is there any sort of magic way to make it competitive from the get-go?
No, because you got too many kids. You got nine guys in this club that came home from spring training. They're on the 25-man roster that were never on a 25-man roster. You got guys that have never been in an opening day lineup. So you start from there, and you've got pitchers in the bullpen that are untried and untested, and I just hope we can outscore some teams and help this pitching staff by scoring some runs for them.
You know, professional sports is so often, teams are so often evaluated on their short-term success, not on their long-term success. If a team doesn't do well for a couple of years, usually there's a management change or they shake up the ball club and they make trades. What does it take, and do you see it here with the Astros, to be really patient for the next few years?
You've seen it already. They've announced and announced and announced what their theory is and what they're doing. Jeff Luhnow has announced his plan. We're going to build from the bottom up. He's made a lot of trades to build up the farm system. 2 years ago, we were dead last in the farm system. We're up to fourth. I've got a feeling we're better than fourth right now. The teams at AAA and AA, especially at Corpus, are terrific. And that's where it is. And if I had some time off when the ball club goes on the road, I'd be going down to Corpus and watching those kids play, because that's the future right down in Corpus Christi.
Milo, thank you very much for talking with me.
Okay, and the check will be in the mail.
Ford Frick Award-winning broadcaster Milo Hamilton at Minute Maid Park. You know, some things just naturally go together, like Milo Hamilton and the Houston Astros, or the city of Houston and traffic. But some things are harder to imagine being combined. Take heavy metal and mariachi bands. It just can't work. Can it? That's the band Metalocci. They bill themselves as the world's first and only heavy metal mariachi band. This six-piece ensemble covers classic heavy metal tunes mariachi style, and they are performing here in Houston at the Scout Bar Friday night. Trumpeter El Cucuy says the band, all brothers, stumbled into the concept out of necessity.
When we were younger, we played a lot of mariachi music, you know, and we came across the album of Black Sabbath, and we loved the music, and we wanted to play it, so we didn't have like monies to buy electric guitars and drums, so we just played the music with our mariachi instruments, you know. And we liked the way it sounded, and like people loved it, and that's how we did it, man.
Vega de la Roca, who sings lead vocals, says while he'd love to see more heavy metal mariachi bands develop, he says it is challenging to find musicians comfortable with both formats.
It's kind of hard to get mariachi musicians that know how to play, like the guitarrón or the vihuela, or the violin, you know, to get them to like play what we do, because it's not really traditional mariachi and they don't like it, or they won't practice, they won't take the time to practice doing it because they, you know, they're kind of stubborn, you know. And the same thing with like metal guys too, because like sometimes the metal guys, they, I mean, there's no one that will like take the time to sit down and like learn a mariachi instrument, because it takes a lot of time, you know. And so you have to find like the rare people who love both, you know. They love mariachi, they play mariachi, but they love metal, so they decide to just do it, you know, with what they already know.
For the most part, Metalocci does stick to heavy metal, but they do stray a bit into pop territory. Consider this take on Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer.
Tommy is to work on the time.
It is on the pop side. We try to, you know, not just maintain the hard stuff, but also bring the, you know, different types of metal, like glam metal, hair metal in a way, into the whole deal. And it actually works out pretty well.
Metalocci's mariachi cover of Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer. You can learn more about Metalocci's music at metalocci.com. Doors open at Scout Bar at 8 tonight. The band takes the stage at 10. Info at scoutbar.com.
We'll give it a shot.
Today's program was produced by Adele Howland and Shamil Ahmed, with production assistance from Florian Martin and Jack Williams. Tom Carter is our technical director. KUHF's director of content is Capella Tucker. To learn more about this program, visit us at HoustonMatters.org. I'm Craig Cohen.
like yesterday.